It's Susie from MERP, and I'm here with Matt from Exhumed. Welcome to Portland.
Thank you.
What major changes have you seen in the industry, and what do you wish was the same since 1991?
Well, you know, technology is sort of ever-changing. People didn't buy records the same way they did in the 80s as they did in the 60s or 50s. You know, there was a transition from like a single format to an album format, AM radio to FM radio, and so on and so forth. So I think the shift to, obviously, you know, from physical to digital is just another change, you know. It may seem more drastic than others, but I think it's more a reflection of the unwillingness to adapt that the industry had more than some radical new thing. So, I mean, ultimately, it's just about finding a way to record music and then get it to people that want to hear it, or help people learn about it so that they'll want to hear it and then give you money for it. Whether that comes in the form of a download or streaming or buying a record or whatever, the medium is less important than the connection aspect of it. So, I mean, I think when people get hung up on this like nostalgia thing, or, you know, the death of physical media and all that kind of stuff, I think it's really short-sighted. I mean, for me, I'm 42. So, yeah, I prefer to hold a record in my hands. I like to go into a store and buy stuff. You know, whether it's records or groceries or whatever, like, I don't think, oh, I need this, I'll just go online. I'm like, I'll just drive down the street. But it's because I'm in my 40s. And thinking that, you know, you come into an industry that's sort of fully formed and maybe seems static, it's only because you have a very tiny window of perspective that you're looking through. Whereas, like I said, you know, whether it's a change from 78 RPM to 33 RPM or singles to albums or whatever, it's always been constantly changing, and things come and things go, whether it's CDs or 8-tracks or whatever. And really, the challenge with the disruption of the internet is that, and it's not just for music, it's for everybody, is that people creating media need to work together to make it continuously profitable, you know? And again, it's just a lack of willingness to adapt, you know? It's the same reason why, rather than developing fucking electric cars or solar-powered cars, it's easier for oil and car companies to just go to Congress and give them money to stop that technology so they can just keep doing the same thing they've always done. So it's just sort of a stubbornness in the way of thinking. And I get it. Like I said, I like records because I'm old. And that's fine. The only sort of downside to it, you know, because everything's a trade-off, I love the accessibility of it, and I think that especially for underground metal, it's been a lifesaver, because in the 80s, you know, and 90s, which people in metal seem to romanticize constantly, but it was like, if a record came out on an independent label and then went out of print, it was basically, like, gone. Unless you knew somebody that had it, you're not going to find it. Like, you can't order it, you can't get it at a record store or whatever, it's just gone. So things came and went actually more rapidly back in the days of physical media. Albums and trends had less staying power. Now, because of the internet, nothing is ever out of print, and if you want to hear, whether it's the Morbid Angel Thy Kingdom Come demo or Cyclone's Brutal Destruction record, or like, pick your obscure release, all you have to do is type, and somebody has curated it. And because of that decentralization of power, you know, away from the labels and the stores and the distributors, like, music that got lost in the cracks has been able to emerge and find a whole new audience, you know, and survive past the trends. Because, I mean, like, you know, in 1987, you could find an Exodus tape in every record store. In 1997, you couldn't find an Exodus tape in any record store. So the internet has been a great equalizer in that. But the downside is that I think, because it's so accessible and you can just get all of it whenever you want, that it doesn't have maybe quite the emotional punch that it did when you had to, like, get $10 a week from your parents for mowing the lawn, and then get on your bike, and then bike to the record store, and then they didn't have the tape that you wanted, so you got to bike to the other record store. Then you finally get home, and you're like, well, this is the only new record I'm going to hear all week, so I better get into it. Like, I really, like, you're already invested in it because of the money spent and because of the effort spent. So there's a difficulty maybe in easily gaining that emotional connection with it when you can just be like, clack, clack, clack. I don't know, I'll listen to 20 seconds, I don't like it, I'll listen to something else kind of thing, you know?
I totally hear what you're saying. I'm older than you, and so I'm the same. I mean, I waited in line at my local record store to do it. And I wanted, so I have like 10 things to ask you now. In our era of foundational rock, I mean, we can go back like Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, sure. Or we can go Entombed, you know, things like that, which I know are an influence with you. Do you think it's easier nowadays for kids to come up with a style because there's so many bands, or is it too much confusion?
I think it's harder. I think it's much harder because in the past, you were sort of operating mostly in the dark, and especially if you didn't live in a city and go to a lot of gigs, like, you could get, whatever, Ride the Lightning, and then you could go buy Pleasure to Kill. And if you live in the sticks in upstate New York or rural Kentucky or whatever, you don't know shit. Like, for all you know, Creator could be more popular than Metallica. You have no idea. And so you're sort of filling in the blanks with your imagination. And because, especially most people starting bands are younger, you know, you don't just be like, well, you know, I've worked in finance for 10 years, I'm going to start a rock band. Usually you're like 15 or whatever. So you really, your purchasing power is very limited and your access is very limited. So because of that, it maybe you would just do something that now people would be like, well, I'm not going to do that because I know that someone else is doing it. Or I know there's already a band called blah, 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 blah because of Metal Archives or whatever. So I think it's actually way harder to be original now than it was then. And also because the genre is 50 years old, yeah. Like, the first Black Sabbath album came out 50 years ago. So within the last 50 years, we've heard funk metal, we've heard folk metal, we've heard operatic metal, we've heard black metal, we've heard fucking death metal, grindcore, technical, brutal death metal, brutal technical death metal, whatever. You know, we've heard metal with accordions, we've heard metal with kazoos, and whatever, you know. Right. So, I mean, it's like, at this point, the ground is so covered, and we have so much information about the ground that's already been covered to just be starting out. And I think that's why, like, a lot of the younger bands, they're either sort of really derivative, which is fine. A lot of the older bands are really derivative, too. But they're really obviously derivative, or they're just kind of throwing everything but the kitchen sink in order to not be derivative. It's like, well, no one's ever used an 8-string guitar on this recording or, like, inserted this whatever computer noise into a song. And, you know, so that's the only thing that's really left, you know?
And it becomes so confusing. Sometimes they really should just take a step back and simpler is better.
I mean, that's my philosophy. But, I mean, again, I'm not trying to harp on my age or whatever, but I've realized that, you know, I've thought about it. And when my dad was my age, I was 18. And so I have no idea what the kids like, and I don't know what they're into, and I'm fine with that. I'm like, you know what? If this is what you like, fucking great. Good for you. I mean, I'm just doing what I'm doing, and I'd stopped worrying about what anybody else is doing a long time ago. So for me, I'm like, hey, this is my thing. If you like it, that's great. If not, cool. And your thing, maybe I don't get it. I'm not going to shit on it. It just doesn't do anything for me because, you know, I'm that guy. I'm, you know.
2018, do you think it's more important to do new albums, touring, or videos to get new fans?
I mean, I think touring is always the best way because I think when you, I don't know, like I said, because you can listen to every album instantly. I mean, I have Spotify, I use it all day. So an album, you know, you might hear it and be like, oh, that's pretty cool, and then you'll just move on to the next thing, especially because there's so much supply, you know what I mean? Supply has far outstripped demand at this point. So I think, but once you see a band, that's going to maybe grab you a little bit more, you know? And video, I think video is kind of tough because you have to, because again, there's so many videos and so much access to it. It has to be something that really stands out, whether it's silly or artsy or whatever, you know? But a video is really important. It's probably more important than it ever has been in this style of music, you know?
So when you look at, like, Spotify and Pandora and stuff like that, I know that the payment is very, very small on those, but the exposure is great. Is it worth it?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, you know, when you're an underground band, like, you're a club band, you know, royalty checks have never been a big part of that sort of business model.
It's a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not like, you know, you're an arena band or whatever where you do one tour a year and then you just sit back and like, cool, I'm selling 5 million records or whatever. Then that's like real fucking money. And nobody's selling that much anymore. So, you know, to me, it was kind of like taking away a few $100 a year from an underground band, or even a couple thousand, is not that big of a deal. You know, it's the Garth Brookses of the world that are getting hurt by that. But luckily, country fans are too fucking stupid to understand the internet, so they're the only ones still buying CDs.
Do you remember the first band that you heard that solidified your love for metal?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I guess December 1986. And I got those 12 tapes for a penny. You know what I'm talking about. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
BMG music.
Yeah. So back in the day, you know, you'd buy like Hit Parade or Circus magazine or whatever, and they would have these two-page ads where you get 12 tapes for a penny to join this club where they send you a cassette every month. And so I had just had like only had like a few tapes or whatever. So I was like, fuck this. I'm going to get 12 tapes for a penny. It's great. And one of the tapes was Master of Puppets. And, you know, I'd heard, like, I liked Quiet Riot and Ozzy and Dio and Twisted Sister and Poison and Cinderella and stuff. No, it must have been 87, because Cinderella and Poison's first albums were in 87. Anyway, this was 87. And then I heard Master of Puppets, and I was like, I'm just, like, throw all these other tapes away. Like, fuck this shit. Like, this is it. You know, it was, like, literally my life was going in one direction. Then I heard that tape. I was like, okay. And, you know, I just started, you know, buying black clothes and growing my hair out and wanted to get a guitar. And then, you know, here I am underneath a nightclub in Portland, sweltering from the heat of a washing machine, you know, all these years later.
When I was 14, I would grow up in a country bluegrass family. And my friend's brother took us to see Motorhead and Ozzy Osbourne with Randy Rhoads. Fantastic. 1981. Changed my life.
Yeah.
Forever. So the lyrical themes in your music is often gore. I wondered, do you have love songs?
Sort of. You know, we do have several, like, sort of necrophilia-related songs. And, you know, a lot of times we use the gore and horror themes sort of metaphorically, you know. But because the nature of the music is so dark or negative or whatever, choose your adjective, they tend to be more about the downsides of relationships or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, you know, they're not love songs in the traditional sense, but we do have songs dealing with the pitfalls of relationships and things like that, yes.
Do you still follow the theory that you want to do pop structure, like verse, chorus, bridge, verse? Do you still follow that pretty...
Absolutely. That's like my whole religion. And in fact, I think that's one of the things that turns me off the most about like underground metal in general, is that there's no hooks in like 90% of the bands, or there's like a hook that never comes back, so it's not really a hook, you know. I think that it's sort of it's a conceit that you think you're smarter than the system, and some people are. Like, I'm not a genius. I know that about myself. I'm very resigned to that, and it's fine. But most people are not, and so in trying to show how clever they are and how many riffs they can cram into one song, what they're really showing is that they don't understand what a song is, and that they're just writing music to, you know, show off, basically.
And most fans don't understand aren't intimate with the music. And so when you don't have something that can be easily captured, like a beat or a melody or a riff or something, right, like that you can get, it's hard as a fan to get it. Like Gojira or Meshuga, you can only love them when you feel every nuance in your body. When you first hear it, it's uncomfortable. So I think your theory is right.
I mean, my thing is that, you know, I've always just tried to play music that I would like, and ultimately, like, you know, especially having been listening to this kind of music for so long, I don't really want to spend 2 hours playing an album over and over to get into it. Like, if I don't hear something right away that I like, I'm like, why? I have fucking thousands of records at my house I could listen to that I already like, so I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to make the listener work for it, like, oh, we really want to challenge you and this and that, it's like, I don't want to be challenged. I want what I want. You know what I mean? And, you know, I also have a very kind of tunnel vision view of the genre, like what I like about it and what I don't like about it. And again, I've been listening to it for 30 years, so I've had plenty of time to think about it. And it's like, if I go to McDonald's, I don't think, you know, I really want to try something new. I'm like, I want a fucking cheeseburger. I go there for a cheeseburger. And, you know, the thing with Exhumed is that we, you know, all our records are different and stuff, but basically we're in a box. If someone buys our record, they're going to get a cheeseburger. We're not going to be like, here's pizza. It's like, wait, I wanted a cheese. You know what I mean? Like, this one might have bacon on it. This one might not. This one might have, like, pesto or whatever on top of it. But still a fucking cheeseburger, you know?
Do you ever see stepping out of that, like, experimentally? Do you ever see wanting to do that, like, for your soul?
I mean, I play in multiple bands doing different things.
So you get that out.
Right. And then, so, I mean, there's no, you know, there's no lack of self-expression. I did, like, a 15-minute soundtrack to, like, a short horror film last year. I have a band called Pounder that plays, like, traditional metal, like, Priest, Diamond Head, you know, with, like, a little bit of, like, Dawkins and a little bit of, like, early Halloween as well. Like, you know, if I want to do something else, I'll do something else. It's just, you know, with Exhumed, especially after so long, it's like, I feel like if you do one record and then the next record's totally different, it's like, well, okay, fair. This is your thing. But if you've done, like, four or five records over a decade, you know, like, that, not the new Morbid Angel, but the one before it, it's like, you know what? You guys just should have called it something else. Like, it's, you know, it's whatever. You do what you want. You're an artist, I guess. But, you know, if you have a brand that's established and people, it's like going into a McDonald's and, like, getting a fucking tray of sushi. Like, I wanted a cheeseburger, you know?
It does have to be hard because, like, if you think about, like, AC/DC, they're so similar. It's like right. A definite formula, you know? So it's got to be hard to, I mean, I guess you do stay within a general formula, but you still, each song is different. But there's some bands that don't do it well.
Well, I mean, that's the goal, you know? It's like, I think, especially now, because even the more extreme sort of heavy metal, you know, I mean, Scum by Napalm Death is 31 years old. So people have been doing this for a long time. So it's going to be really difficult to come up with something really surprising and novel at this point. So I think it is better to just sort of, like, hey, this is basically what we do, and, you know, there's variations, but if you like this, then you'll probably like us, you know?
So 2017, Death Revenge is the last release. What is next for you?
Well, we're doing this tour, and we have a bunch of songs written, and we're looking to get back in the studio fairly early next year. Nothing in stone yet, but that's sort of the next thing, and then, you know, more records, more shows, and just keep doing what we're doing, you know?
Do you still love it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, why the fuck would I do this if I don't love it? You know, I mean, like, not, I mean, this is a nice club. There's nothing wrong with it or whatever, and the pizza's good, but it's like, this isn't, you know, after having toured for a really long time, like, why would you do this if you didn't enjoy it? Like, it's crazy. Obviously, some days are better than others, and sometimes you're just like, ugh. But in general, of course I love it. I mean, it's like, the money that we make doing this is not worth doing it if you don't love it, you know?
Anything else you want to talk about?
I mean, I'm good if you're good. I don't know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it.